delegate as any natural person elected by the members or class of members and is serving as such. Delegates serve as the members' representatives in electing the foundation directors. There should be a full stop period there. Delegates may only act personally at a meeting or by written ballot and may not act by proxy. Nominations of delegates under the KPFA proposal are nominations for the Office of Local Station Delegate should be open from September 1st to November 1st. There's a footnote saying that in the first election be for 45 days after Radifers would be delivered to an independent neutral elections coordinator who shall not hold any elective office in Pacifica and shall not be an employee of Pacifica Foundation, who shall be chosen by each local station board by majority vote to oversee, certify the fairness of the elections and that they are conducted in conformity with the bylaws. Nominations papers shall consist of the required numbers of signatures, which is 10 for listener sponsor candidates and 2 for staff candidates, I believe it is here, and a written statement up to 500 words in length. Listener sponsors in good standing may be nominated as a position of delegate by the signatures of 10. Yeah, and the only you can't be eligible for election. Any eligible person is a member in good standing who does not hold any elective or appointed public office at any level of government, federal, state, or local.
You are listening to the Pacifica
Inter-Pacifica
National Board meeting here at the Windsor, I should say the Warwick Hotel.
Yeah, will you do that again?
In Houston. And I will tell you that you're listening to KPFA or KPFB Berkeley, KFCF Fresno.
How long it's been.
KPFK Los Angeles, WPFW Washington,
right,
D.C., and WBAI in New York.
There's a restriction on eligibility to serve in the Pacifica governance at the local or national level, prohibiting anyone who holds elective or appointive public office at any level of government, federal, state, or local, or who is a candidate for such office, or who has held such elective or appointed office within the preceding 3 years. A delegate shall be deemed to have resigned from the position of delegate if he or she becomes a candidate for public office or receives a political appointment during his or her term. This restriction does not apply to civil service employment in government agencies, but it does apply to political appointees and elective offices. All right, so staff member in good standing may be nominated for the office of delegate by 5 signatures. I said 2. So it's 10 for listeners, 5 for staff. We already defined how many hours yesterday. They have the same restriction about public office and political office. Election of delegates. Listener sponsor members in each of the
Leslie.
Station areas shall elect 12.
Carol, what about appointed judicial offices?
That's an appointed level of governmental office, yes. So they would not be permitted if you were a judge. That's correct. Listener sponsor members in each station area would elect 12 delegates who would sit on the local station board. 1/3 of the listener sponsor delegates would be elected annually by mail ballot, so that they would be rotating, subject to diversity criteria specified below. Cumulative voting is permitted. Proportional representation, signal transferable voting method is also permitted. We need a legal opinion about it. There would be a 30-day period for return of ballots after mailing. And the ballots would be counted and the elections results certified by the elections coordinator by the end of year, December 29th. Staff delegates for each station would elect 6. Staff members would elect 6 who would sit on the local station board. 1/3 of the staff delegates would be elected each year. Same thing, cumulative voting or proportional representational voting is permitted. Certified fairness. The KPFA committee strongly recommends the following diversity criteria in elections. It is the goal of the Pacifica Foundation that a minimum of 50% of the delegates shall be racial ethnic minorities and a minimum shall be women. To that end, in any election of delegates, half the number of seats to be filled shall be filled by the top vote-getters who are racial ethnic minorities, and half the number of seats to be filled shall be filled by the top vote-getters who are women, regardless of whether they are or not they are among the top vote-getters overall. I could read you the technical language about this. What it means is if you're a woman of color, you meet both of the criteria. But we want 50% of our boards to be women and 50% minimum to be people of color. And if the top vote getters are not women and people of color, we will bump white people off or men off to achieve it.
Who gets a different phraseology for that, maybe?
That, I'm trying. I'm bump off of school.
Bump is off. No, no, the bumping off. No, it's the bumping off part that I take.
I'm trying to not mince words. What we're saying here is that in order to achieve our 50% minimum, a person of color who got less votes than a white person might be seated, if that's what it takes to get our minimum criteria. We did put a restriction on it, and it is that they have to have received at least half the number of seats votes required, minimum number of votes required to be elected. That's our proposal. We also have fair campaign provisions. No foundation or radio station management or staff may use airtime to endorse or campaign or recommend for or against any particular candidate for election, or give airtime to some candidates but not others. All candidates for election shall be given equal opportunity for airtime, and such airtime shall be specially set aside for candidates. And questions and answers from listeners. No foundation or radio station management or staff may give written endorsements. The terms are 3 years. Delegates may serve 2 consecutive terms, after which they have to take a year off. That's the complete section on delegates. I will say at KPFA, it's based on our experience that we have for 2 years had minimum requirements of women and people of color. What we said was 50% plus or minus one. After 2 years' experience with it, it did have a cap on it. It was plus or minus one. We took the cap off and just said let's go for 50%. And it's worked. We're happy with it.
Okay. Can we hear from Bob about this proposal? And then I see someone's rising.
If I can just point something out, Leslie, really quick.
Are they an alternative proposal?
If I can just point something out really quickly relative to that. Okay. The proposal that Carol just described was also embraced by the KPFK Bylaws Subcommittee Convention, the only difference being that in that model there was that the candidates would have served a year on the local advisory board in order to be eligible for election to the national board.
There's 1 year for eligibility to the local station board, 1 year on the board for eligibility to PNB.
I'm sorry, how do you qualify to run for the local board?
Yeah. A year's membership. Mind you, this has nothing to do with staff. This is just the listener sponsors. It was a year's membership. We also voted that we wanted the first proposal as listed under the KPFA draft. Regarding diversity, we approved the first wording proposal.
That's it.
Yes.
Okay.
And we also said with the single transferable voting, instead of may, we have shall in our bylaws.
And I'll point out that in my proposal C, it says shall have proportional and or single transferable vote. So there's a variety of schemes, and you wanted to ask from Bob, the Unity Caucus?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you, David.
I got mine in there somehow.
Right. Bob, yeah.
Thanks, Leslie. My name is Bob Lederer. I'm from the WBAI Signal Area from the Unity Caucus. And for those who didn't hear the presentation yesterday, in 30 seconds, the Unity Caucus proposal is what we call the constituency model for providing self-representation of both communities that have been oppressed, discriminated against, and marginalized on the one hand, and also geographic segments of each listener area, of each signal area, as well as at-large listener seats, and as well as staff, both paid and unpaid. Each would have be a separate class of members of the foundation who would separately elect members to the board, 15 from the first category, what we call the mission, 15 from the different categories of listener, whether geographic or at large, and 6 from the staff. And then this would be in an effort to make sure that the mission is fully fulfilled. Now, what's become clear from all of the incredible hard work that have been done in all 5 signal areas by the bylaws committees is that every station and the listeners and staff from those stations are guided first and foremost by their local experience and the local conditions on the ground there, and that's why we have these 7 or 8 different models that have so many differences that have a lot of regional variation. And we recognize that there's a lot of difficulty in reaching a consensus on this board based on that. And so the suggestion that we in the Unity Caucus have made with, we've been discussing this with several board members who are sympathetic to it, is that perhaps rather than choosing a very detailed model of any sort for the composition and the methods of election to a local board, that there simply be a broad set of parameters as to both standards to make that process legal and ethical and in keeping with our mission, but leave the more detailed determination of how that works out, including the number of seats on the board and how they're subdivided, to each local advisory board in the current system as kind of their parting act before they go out of business, is to determine that electoral method with a fail-safe, with a possibility for the national board to review and veto if they think it's taking us taking the foundation away from the mission or is illegal, but that basically be locally determined for 1 year, and that at the end of 1 year, as many groups have been endorsing this weekend, that there be a convention throughout Pacifica about this part of the bylaws, at least, if not the whole bylaws, to look at what worked and what failed in the preceding year and whether those electoral mechanisms should be adjusted and ideally and hopefully made much more uniform. And we think there's ways that this could be done legally, by allowing different classes of membership to exist in different cities on a 1 year trial basis. And just finally, the way that this could be implemented, I think, we spent a lot of time looking at the grid and finding there's some very interesting language in 3 or 4 of the documents from different cities that could be cut and pasted together to create the kind of open possibilities that we're describing, such as the template, I think, could be actually the KPFA model in terms of rules of fairness, rules of diversity, and other rules to make sure that it's a proper election, but also taking some of Dave Fertig's very interesting language in Article 3, Section 3 about Pacifica's stated goal that both labs and PNB be composed of at least half women and one half people who are not predominantly of European and American descent, and furthermore that all boards seek to be substantially diverse in terms of race, gender, sexual orientation, age, class, and geographic region within applicable signal areas, and we would add nationality and disability as well. So those are some tentative ideas, and we have more detailed suggestions if people want those.
Okay, thank you. So we're open for conversation on this. One more, Tom. Yeah, just the PAC.
Okay, the PAC.
I'm sorry, just so we're all clear, because not everybody on the board was here yesterday, not everybody in the room was yesterday. This is a discussion of the board, and we're working off the grid. The problem is that the grid doesn't have all the proposals on it. So that's why we are taking some comments from people who aren't on the board to clarify and add things so that we have the fullest range of options and ideas before us. It's not public comments, in other words.
Now, this is from the PAC proposal that there is one union staff, two volunteer staff that can be elected, and the rest are 18 from the general membership.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, so who had their hands up? Yeah, Marion.
Yeah, we have... Marion.
Now, Copeland, I want to speak against the anti-democratic provision, which excludes elected officials or former elected officials who have been in office less than 3 years. That is anti-democratic. If I'm a member of the Pacifica Foundation, and $25 is the minimum that I have to pay to become a minimum, why discriminate against those elected officials or former officials? When does it end? Next it'll be those in wheelchairs can't do it. Or those who are gay and lesbian can't do it, can't get on the board. That doesn't make any sense to me. I would like for this board to be democratic if we're serious about that. And why that category anyway? And I'm not speaking just because I happen to be a former elected official, but I would speak against any discrimination against anybody. Any set of membership should not be discriminated against. And secondly, the requirement that you have been on the lab for a year, the previous year, before you can run as a delegate on a newly constituted lab, again, doesn't make sense. With the exception of KPFA, it's my analysis that most of these local boards have been anti-democratic. Small cliques of people staying in office forever. This provision will prevent new blood. It will prevent new creativity. It will prevent for people who came to the table late to be involved. I think those are not democratic proposals. They are anti-democratic. And I would urge this board to vote them down and not have any restriction on anything except membership. If you're a member, you're a member. And that's what you ought to be. And that membership ought to start at the time that these bylaws are adopted. Mm-hmm. You can join. Why should people who didn't like what was going on in Pacifica Foundation and didn't join, they've been excluded because of anti-democratic, do that? So I would urge this board to not accept those two provisions as a criteria for membership as a delegate to local boards.
Okay, simple as that. Right, thank you. Okay, Teresa, did you want to speak to this?
Yes, I'm just very much concerned since that our mission is in public broadcasting, that if you are running for office, that at the same time you could run for the lab or the board and be campaigning. You know, we would be giving you a forum ostensibly for running for the lab, but you'd get your name, you know, you'd get that name recognition for another office, and it could be misused that way. Not that I'm opposed to people being involved in public office, but I think it could be, our airwaves could be really abused that way.
Well, people are smarter than that.
Okay,
voters are smarter than that. You don't
need to say on this. Carol and George.
Our reason for it was the one that Teresa just said, but also that Pacific is a member of the Fourth Estate. It's our job to criticize, go after, deconstruct, and be a pain in the butt for government. And if we have a member of our local board who's serving on a local, state, or national government agency or elected, it puts our network in a very awkward position. I don't think we should ever be in there, and I don't think democracy is our highest value. I think our mission is.
Okay, George was next, and then Ray.
Yes, George Barnstone, Houston, Texas. I got to tell you, I have a problem with having a third of the delegates be staff members. That seems like an awful high percent. I mean, you know. I'm sorry, I beg your pardon. I'm sorry. It seems like an awfully high percentage of a third of the delegates to be staff members. I mean, I know they have an important part, and I agree with that. But are you friendly to decreasing that?
No. I, KPFA, we actually, for the last 2 years, have had greater than a third. We've had 8 out of 22, which is slightly more than a third. I think we've benefited tremendously from the dialogue that's been brought together between listeners and staff members. And staff are, you would be surprised, they're never monolithic. There are many different points of view among staff, and it's really enriched our and helped us a lot. I would not recommend less than a third, and that's what our committee likes.
Okay, Ray.
Well, first, I disagree with Marion that those labs are necessarily anti-democratic. I'm sitting on a lab which wasn't elected. We have plenty of limitation and shortcomings, but I wouldn't call a functioning anti-democratic. Now, I do like the suggestion from KPFK that people would have to wait 1 year before they can have membership before running for the lab. But I don't see why somebody who's running would have to wait 1 year as a member of the lab of the station board before running for the national board.
Let me just tell you what the discussions were. The waiting 1 year as a member before running for the board had to do with protecting the board, the station board, from people flooding in with new memberships in an attempt to take over. So that was the reason behind that. And you may know that many public jurisdictions require someone before they run for state legislature to be living in a district for a year.
Usually 30 days to not a year.
It depends which district.
Every district, 30 days. Every state, 30
okay.
days.
And the second part was about having people on the board for a year before they could run for the national. The purpose for that was we had lots of discussions about how do we know who is going to be a real working member of a board rather than just a titular member. So this was our way of making sure that we had a year to see how someone functioned on the station board and see if they would be effective on the national board before they would could get there. So those are the reasons.
Can I just finish? I'd like to ask Bob Lederer to resolve, at least to me, the apparent contradiction between the settlement right now calling on three-fifths of the lab to ratify the mode, the type of election, and you leaving that to local areas.
There's not a contradiction as long as the bylaws are very clear that says that this it will be in the new bylaws that for the first year only, this is a decision that is being delegated to the existing outgoing labs on a one-shot basis to determine the electoral mechanism, and that the whole thing will be revisited a year later in as a result of a convention about bylaws.
Let me, if I could just call myself for a second and call Jabari. I just want to raise another concern I have, and I don't know what to do about this, but I'm concerned about a system, an election system, that has us running elections every year. Mm-hmm. And the amount of energy and money and time, et cetera, that takes. And I haven't done the May. I do support a staggered system so that, so if it could be even every other year. It just seems better, easier for one thing. I don't know if it's better, but easier, maybe that's the way to say it. I don't remember who was next. Jabari was next, then Carol, then Janice. And then I'll get deep.
Jabari's here. First, how did you get these magic numbers of 12 listener sponsors and 6 station boards, because our committee came up with a minimum of 12 to maximum of 35 LAB members may constitute a board, and the purpose there was to allow for wide geographical potential representation. I also shared a concern with this yearly election thing because it's just time consuming. And from my preliminary examinations of how much it would cost, talking to an actual firm that does elections, and it's going to be somewhere between, depending on how many members you have in a listening area, they would charge like 50 cents per vote plus $6,000 to do it. So it could be in our listening area something like $10,000 to $15,000 just to conduct a election if you went with like an independent firm that, could just do all this thing efficiently. It would be secure and things like that. So I have that concern, the same concern that Leslie shares. Irrespective of the cost, I think it just like diverts so much of your time every year to just campaigning, running. That you're always in that mode. You're never not in a campaign mode. So I don't want to reiterate that. But I think the numbers of delegates are just for listening sponsors is too low. I would like to see more representation.
Okay.
I think it was Carol and Janice.
That's what it was.
Well, yeah. You asked the question how we came up with the number. We wanted one-third, two-thirds representation of one-third staff, two-thirds listener sponsors. So that's 12 is twice six. Our board, our local board, has been 22 members for the last 2 years. Under the old bylaws, you had to have a minimum of 12 and a maximum of 24. And we've
what was your quorum?
What?
What was your quorum?
50%. So anyway, our board has been 22 members for 2 years, and our board actually talked about it. We think our board is too large. It's very difficult for us to work, to hear everybody, to function as a board because of the size. So we thought that if we brought it down from 22, it was the actual recommendation, I think, was 15, that we go 5 and 10. Anyway, we settled on, I don't know how we got to 18, but the feeling was that the board was too large to work effectively and so on. I think we also did look at the rotation. There is something to be said for doing an election every year. That is all the outreach, the wonderful stuff that the Unity Caucus is proposing people do to get out in the community and involve them in the station. The recruitment of candidates and the campaigning, and that really does build something around the station every year that happens, and it just broadens the base of involvement and support for the station. On the other hand, you're right, it cost us $12,000 at KPFA to do it. Another reason why we wanted to do one-third, one-third, one-third is there are constantly people raising the same question that Sam Husseini raised, which is what happens if somebody wants to acquire a $500 million network for somewhere around $500,000 by buying up memberships. It would take them 3 years to take over a local board, and we could organize around it if we're electing boards a third at a time. However, you could do a three-year term where you elected half the board for two consecutive years and took the third year off, and that would work. You'd have half the board elected rather than a third. We like the staggered term because you've got continuity and turnover. You're always bringing in new people. And under our single transferable voting mechanism, what we found was that our full geographical area got covered. We've got people from all over our signal area. The reason I said is permitted rather than shall be required is that I have a question as to whether single transferable voting mechanism is legal for California corporations. If it's not, cumulative voting does much the same thing.
Okay, we have Janice, and then if I would recognize Ken.
I really am not in favor of annual elections. I think that we need other things need to be taken care of other than governance all the time. We have lots of other issues that people need to be involving themselves with. And this third, one-third, one-third, one-third thing, honestly, Carol, when I read it, I get lost in the sentences when I try to understand the different formulas that you guys put together. And you know I'm right because it is so confusing. So these staggered terms, if we could have half the board and half the board, maybe every 3 years or something, it just seems so unworkable. And I understand about trying to protect, but everybody in here who's got kids knows you can tell them not to do certain things, and they'll come up with something else crazy to do that you don't want them to do. So you just really can't protect against all the craziness that can happen in the world. I'm sort of torn about this thing about the what Marion's talking about elected officials. I definitely think that when somebody's running, we shouldn't. But suppose we had a Charles Barron or a Barbara Lee or Cynthia McKinney who wanted to be on, you know, somebody nominated them to run now. Would we say no? We would?
Well,
okay. All right.
No, we won't say no yet. We haven't got decided that. Don't
but I'm just asking.
No, right. Some people would feel comfortable saying
you'll
no.
You'll about it.
Okay, Ken.
Ken Freeland, KPFT Signal Area. It won't come up until Section 5, or Article 5, Section 4.
So don't bring it up now.
Pardon?
So we're on Article 4.
I understand that, but I want to just speak to the pertinence of that to this, because the KPFT Governance Committee is on record as opposing quotas for governance. And so it is relevant to this point. I just want to recall that. I'll speak to a greater length then. Thank you.
Okay.
Leslie, motion in order?
Well, no, I don't think yet.
All right.
And motion is in order. Also, what we were doing yesterday, for those of you who aren't here, is that, I'm sorry, I should have said this earlier, what we were seeking to do by the end of this weekend is to get through as much of this and hopefully at least the major items with a sense of where we have agreement, not every I dotted and T crossed, but the conceptual things, that then that would be taken, that would be a new draft would be put together based on that, that would then be circulated again to the board and to the LABs for another round of input and feedback, that we're assuming that we're not going to, you know, do a final vote on bylaws this weekend. It's just not going to happen. So we've been taking a sense of the body on each thing, not a formal, you know, motion. So, Ted.
Okay. 2 points. Specifically to the issue Marion is raising about political candidates, I want you to know that the Houston Bylaws Committee voted 10-0 in favor of the following. Any member of the foundation is eligible to be a director of the foundation. We debated extensively the question of political candidates and came down saying that political candidates, unanimously we decided that political candidates and politicians could serve on the local board. On a general point, we have spent extensive amounts of time discussing these issues, and I would hope that you would use some of the wisdom, not all of it, but some of the wisdom that we have put into this effort in your discourse rather than revisiting these issues, which seems like that may be what is going on.
Okay, Ted, thank you.
This is WBAI in New York, WPFW in Washington, D.C., KPFK in Los Angeles, KFCF in Fresno, KPFB in Berkeley, and KPFA in Berkeley. You're listening to the Interim Pacifica National Board meeting in Houston, Texas. Thanks to all the stations carrying this, and thanks to all the listeners, and thanks to all the programmers who made way this weekend for these broadcasts.
Some people agree and think one way, and others another way. So we're getting a sense of the board. Right, in today's deliberations. We're not going to get a sense of where every person in the room is or every committee that's represented in the room. We're looking for the board, where the board thinks on this. What I'd like to do is first of all, there's a big conceptual issue that we've been asked to grapple with. That is whether or not we feel the election of delegates, as described in Article 4, whether we like it all or want to change some of it, do we need one established way that the election of delegates happens, or could we explore the possibility of giving some leeway to each city to determine its election process? That was one of the questions that came up in this discussion. You may not like it, but it was put before us. You may disagree with it, but that was what was put before us. Right, so I think we need to answer that concept issue, right, and then move from there to more of the particulars. Rob, did you want to speak to that?
I just want to strongly support what you just said, Leslie. I think this is an area where we don't have consensus, and what we may have to do in order to implement things is provide ourselves with a little bit of flexibility in the first year.
Okay.
So thank you very much for those.
And, you know, I
seeing the wide variety of proposals and the vehemence with which they're embraced and the commonality of goals, but the different methodologies suggested to achieve those goals, I think that it would be an interesting, if not terribly frightening and potentially chaotic, but that's Pacifica, right? Frightening and chaotic. Endeavor to use the stations as a laboratory, in a sense, to test these various methodologies. But it's frightening. I don't embrace this unreservedly. I just think that it's a viable notion that needs to be explored.
It really is. Because we'd be providing a framework, right? There would be a certain goal that the stations would have to work toward, and there would be certain legal things they'd have, legal requirements, right?
Well, I don't know.
Right, Carol.
Bylaws have to spell out the rights of the members by class. So if the rights of the members in New York are different from the rights of the members in Houston, then we have two classes of members, a different class of members for BAI, then we have a class of members for Houston. That is legally possible. I mean, we could end up with 35 classes of members. We would have a document that'd be more than 20 pages long if we did.
And we have to identify each class?
Yes. And their rights have to be spelled out specifically, because you don't have a right you can't enforce, and you can't enforce a right that's not spelled out. That's the bottom line. But I want to speak against this, even though I think it's possible. I think what it does is it delays a difficult decision for a year. We have a difficult decision to make. It's not easy. We are not going to have any more consensus in a year than we have now. We're facing a really hard thing. Do we want racial and ethnic requirements in our on our boards? Some of our stations do. Some of our stations don't. They feel very strongly about it. Some of our stations want more categories. One of our stations does. But that's the crux of the issue. I don't think that issue is going to get any easier next year than it is right now, and I think we should cross that bridge now.
I agree with that part. I'm just curious, is there a way that this class thing could be dealt with open enough that people within each station area could make it suit them? Is there some language?
That's actually something that have to go to our lawyer, and it'd be very technical to draft.
Because as far as I'm concerned, the racial and ethnic requirements thing you're talking about, I think that is something we need to decide now, and I think it should be one of those structural things that we say to the five stations, this has to be done, that these certain, that diversity requirements must be met, because that's what we do.
Boy, okay, well, that's another. That is another kind of big concept issue that I think we still need to see. You know, where we fall on that. That we would have in the bylaws a requirement for racial diversity as a, you know, as a minimum, right, or not, right? And then if we agree, then the question is, where do we go to implement that? You know, and there are different ideas. There's the KPFA model, and then there's constituency model. And there may be others, too, that I'm not thinking of right now. But at least we should decide what the ground floor is here that we're working from. Right? So maybe we can take a straw poll on that issue. I just want to get some straw polls
all right.
going here. Is that all right, Ray?
No, I was going to say, I don't think it's delaying the process, but rather it is allowing, once the criteria are set, that we consider are necessary, we corporate requisites, such as diversity and others, that each area would be allowed to experiment with a model that they feel is better suited to their own needs. And I don't consider it as a transition.
Okay, what I want to do is take a first straw poll.
I don't know if it is legal.
I want to divide this up a little bit. First, I want to see to get a straw poll on whether or not our bylaws should mandate a diversity requirement. Right, our bylaws should have a diversity requirement in it. I'm not talking about the particulars of it, right, but I just want to clear that up. Okay? So all those who agree that our bylaws should mandate diversity requirements, please raise your hand. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten. 10, and all those who don't agree.
Yeah, he's on mine, though.
Two. Okay, two don't. That's okay. So basically, we are going to work on how to have the diversity requirement. Right? That's the consensus. That's the, not a consensus, that's a majority, the big majority. Now, within that, is there another model that I'm missing? Is it just the KPFA model and the constituency model? Have I heard any other models? Or?
Well, I was going to speak to Houston, but they had it in the outreach.
Okay, but we're talking now about the voting.
No.
We're talking about the voting.
In terms of models that had requirements for compliance,
yeah, requirements.
I think you covered it.
Okay, so those are two. And one idea was to let each station, basically, each of the five listening areas, decide how to handle the diversity requirement. There's a question about the legality of that and et cetera, and I don't know that we can answer that now, if it's legal or not. Maybe, you know, we have to go get some legal advice on that one.
Well, I think that we can set up as many classes of membership as we want to. We could set up 100 classes of membership. It's legal to have as many classes of membership as you want with different rights. The question is, do we want to do that for me? Do we want members with different rights, different voting systems, which then result in different kinds of boards? There's an argument for it, which is, oh yeah, this will work great in New York, but somebody else says, well, it won't work here, so why should we do it? There's a very good argument for saying we're different cities with different requirements, and we should recognize that in our bylaws formally. But I think something's really getting slipped by here. Oh, let's put it off a year. Let's try it for a year. Let's face this hard issue in a year. Let's amend the bylaws in a year after trial. When you put something in your bylaws and you want to change a member's right, you have to get their vote of approval to change it. All right? So in a year, when we come back to a bylaws convention and maybe we want to change the members' rights and regularize them, we might not be able to do that because the members might not agree to regularizing their rights and having the same thing. We can't do it. You can't change a member's rights without their vote of approval. That's the law. I think, as difficult as it is, we need to experiment for a year with the same thing. And if that doesn't work, ask our members uniformly across the nation to consider another approach. That's what I think, and I think that our lawyers would look at this constituency model and gasp in horror that in some constituencies 50 people could elect someone. In other constituencies, my vote would be divided amongst 4,000 other people, and it'd be one. It's just strange.
Okay, I'm not sure that that's a legal opinion, but it's strange. Okay, Teresa, and then Jabari, and then Ray.
Carol, I can really appreciate where you're coming from, and I. My problem is this. You've done your elections twice, so you're very firm in your mind what you want. And we have the grid. I thought we had the grid so that we wouldn't go with any one as a template. But when it comes to the election, because you have done it and you're so firm, it concerns me that there's just a very strong push to go with your template. I personally don't think that one-third. I don't want one-third of the people on our lab to be staff.
Okay, but we'll come to staff.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm just concerned about
the frequency, the government. We're just talking about the diversity requirements.
Just
the
diversity, okay.
Just for clarity's sake. We'll come back to those issues. Awesome. I'm sorry, I think Jabari, Ray, and then George.
Jabari's here. One of the things I'm really concerned with
is that we do a minimum of what we think is absolutely required and codify them in the bylaws as language of requirements. Then we try to extract what we would like to see as a sense of the body and codify that in operation and procedural manuals and allow experimentation at that level without a necessity of having to go back and amend bylaws when you find that things don't work. So what the reason I didn't vote for the for mandating these kinds of things into this set of bylaws is because I agree that we should have a convention a year or whatever down the line to assess what works. The less we have to change by amendment, the easier it would be to go through the process. I think the bottom line, what we're trying to achieve is a working solution to governance in the real world, not on paper, but in the real world. Because like Janice said, if people don't want to follow rules, they ain't going to follow no rules. And if people really want to follow rules and create a certain type of community, they don't need nothing on paper to make them do that. So I'm just very concerned that people are substituting stuff on paper as what will actually happen in the real world. And I think I want to be really clear that I'm really concerned with doing what I think will actually work in the real world and not what seems to theoretically will work just on paper.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we have George.
No, Ray.
I'm sorry, Ray, George, David.
Yeah.
No, first we have Ray, George, David.
I would like to say first, I believe I heard Carol say that that the diversity criteria has not been left to specific communities. If I understand the unity proposal properly, this item would be on the criterion that we would have that would be universally observed. Second, I'd like to say
that
the diversity criteria would be observed by everybody. Other items that would be. Maybe I'm wrong. Can I be corrected?
I thought their compromise proposal was that each city could figure the diversity requirement out.
Including diversity requirement?
Yeah,
I think we're confusing two different terminologies. The diversity requirements that have been in the different versions of the grid, the only ones I've ever seen are 50% people of color, 50% women. The constituency model, the Unity Caucus has a list of 14 different constituencies, about six of which are subdivisions of people of color, and then there's others, and women are included, but there's also lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, disabled, et cetera, young people. So they're really separate issues. So by the vote that, or the straw poll you just took, that doesn't settle the question of how you would deal with those other aspects of diversity.
Well, now, you're assuming diversity only means people of color.
No.
All we said before was that we want our bylaws to mandate that there be diversity requirements. We didn't say diversity in what categories or how to implement that or whatever.
Okay, then I stand corrected as the vote you took.
So
the point I was making, though, is that to me, I'm assuming that when KPFA got ready to have an election mandating that 50% of the elected be people of color and women, that some people thought it was going to be a chaos, going to be a disaster. That you just show up, and if you're good, you get elected, and this is plain and simple. Apparently, the reality is that not only it's workable, but that it's beneficial. So I'm suggesting that that we don't allow the a lack of familiarity with the system just scare us into looking in, you know, prevent us from looking into it. And we'll be open-minded about it.
Okay. I have George and David, and I see both Sam and Miguel want to say something very, very briefly about this. Okay, but I'm talking really briefly. George, and then David.
George Barnstone, Houston is next.
Leslie, you had said
let me be clear again. Don't start lining up at these mics. We're not doing that. We're not doing that. Okay, George, excuse me. George.
Yes, thank you. Leslie, perhaps it's my misreading of the grid or a mistake of the grid. And that is in regard to the diversity requirement.
you had said that the only models we had were KPFA and the model from New York. If you look on page 16, I believe, on diversity goals, you'll see that the KPFC committee has come up with some percentages.
Okay, you're right. That's why I was asking before. I didn't remember that. All right, thank you. Thank you.
Right. I think that it's mislabeled as a goal.
Right.
If I could point out, I think we just took a... Let me clarify the straw poll of this body.
Yes, please.
I thought we took a straw poll that we would do more than have goals.
Yes.
That we would have requirements.
Yeah,
a goal is something you hope to achieve. A requirement is something you do. And I thought the straw poll of this sense of this body was that we wanted more than goals.
Yes.
If that's what we just voted on, or if that's not what we just voted on, maybe we should do it again.
No, we did.
I'm not addressing that. We did vote on that.
The question is, did everybody understand that we were voting on that? Did everybody understand that we voted on requirements?
It was
a straw poll, and there was overwhelming support for it.
We're on the exact same page. All I'm saying is that under this grid, it is under the label a goal, and
right.
It is not a goal under how it is written.
It's a requirement.
He's saying on page 16 that the proposal that came out of KPFT, it says section 4, diversity goals. It shouldn't say goals.
It says shall. That's mandatory language. That's what George
shall is include, which makes it more than just a goal.
So T gets credit for making it more than a goal. That's what George is
saying. No, shall is not a goal. Shall is a mandate. May is a goal.
He's saying that
it's inappropriate to have labeled that a diversity goal. Right. And that it should have been considered as part of this conversation. That's what he's saying. Okay, now, and I'm sorry, but can you just refresh us about what the difference is?
Can you summarize it?
I was asking somebody from KBFT to summarize it, since it was their proposal.
Yeah.
I'll read it. To ensure diversity of the board, and we're now talking about the national board, right? The delegation from each station local board shall include at least one woman and at least one racial or ethnic minority, which may be one and the same person.
That's to the national board.
So it's a requirement. But what we're actually been talking about is the requirements for the local boards. So let's come back to this again when we visit the national board, the composition. Okay, so David, what's next?
Yeah, I just wanted to make a point and clarify something. Clarify something first. The reason I voted against that actually is a number of reasons, and basically it's that I think we can do it. I think we can do it without tying our hands to do it. But also, I'm very concerned that it may not even be legal to mandate racial constraints upon board membership of a California nonprofit tax-exempt corporation. And that's a great concern to me. Now, I know the law school to which I belong, People's College of Law, the National Lawyers Guild Law School in Southern California, had the goal of two-thirds minority and 50% plus women, and we always achieved it. I'm not sure. I did not ever do the legal research on this, because my proposal contained only a goal, because I believe we can attain it. If we work at it, we keep it in the forefront of our mind. I did not do the legal research to justify or defeat the arguments of mandatory racial constraints upon membership of a tax exempt. I'm concerned if anyone has done that legal research.
No, the whole body of ideas that we have to be taken to a lawyer. There may be other things also that we're missing some legal.
We should spend so much time on it and then find out it's illegal would be...
Well, but what we need to spend time on is what politically we want to do. If the lawyer then says to us, you may want to do that, but you're going to end up violating the law, then we'll have to reconsider. But our job today, and however long it's going to take, is to figure out politically what we want to do. And then we incorporate the legal insights and make
I just wanted to make that point. That's
yeah.
Thank
okay.
you.
All right. So, Sam, you had a point on this?
I have a
Sam Husseini from Washington, D.C.
I understand that. That's why I'm asking to be recognized after this.
Okay, so on this point, the diversity requirements issue, and really the issue is now, can different signal areas have different diversity requirements or mechanisms for achieving diversity? Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Right.
Miguel Maldonado
from New York.
My name is Miguel Maldonado. I just wanted, in reference to that issue, I think that I was thinking something that Shaveri mentioned before. We were having some discussion about that last night, which was about people are a member of Pacifica. And I think that we were clear that that people are a member of Pacifica, I think, yesterday. So it seems to me that they kind of divide and allow each inner area to have their own category. Basically, when we are living, and that includes the geographic, to take a look into the geographically way that we are living, we're different cities, but very similar in terms of the ethnic composition of each of those cities. And I want to be really careful with this, but I think that some of those cities, like between Houston and San Francisco, Berkeley, Washington, D.C., New York, I think there's very similarity, Los Angeles. That seems to me that kind of requirement in trying to allow a thinner area to make their own classification, I don't think that there's a practically. And it just create more, put more into the mix, and make things more difficult when it comes to the legal point, which when that's supposed to go to a lawyer. I think that we should make things easy from the legal point of view, not to forget that sometimes it's a little bit complicated, but we can make it easy based on what we have and how things could be done. That's one thing. And the second thing that I'm trying to address is in terms of the forgot my point. But just basically in terms of the diversity, that I just wanted to say that, yeah, I think that somehow Carl is coming along with the issue that I was thinking to support and made that clear.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So so we're still left with this question. Can we take a straw poll? Right. The straw poll would be whether or not we think one mechanism for all five cities, or the cities can employ their own mechanism for achieving diversity.
And this reminder, you're listening to KPFK in Los Angeles, WBAI in New York, WPFW in Washington, D.C., KPFA and KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno.
A little while, we come back with some people complaining that the local board in Washington didn't do it right, didn't include enough subcategories.
It's very
I just think that's too, it's just too complicated to deal with that. I think we could mandate minimum requirements and let the board figure out how to fill them. Local board.
Okay.
So I'd like to suggest that we vote that way.
Okay, so let's take this poll. I have to word it one way or the other way. So what I'm going to do the wording, just because we're, again, starting from the grid. That's how we've done everything else, working off the grid, is that the straw poll is whether or not there should be a common approach, a common method used in meeting the diversity requirement and conducting the elections in each of the five listing areas. If you agree with that,
Leslie, I have one. I have to ask this question.
Okay.
Carol, question 13 on your Spooner questions.
Well, I wrote those 5 months ago. Just tell me what.
Should local boards from different signal areas have the same election rules?
Yeah, we asked that question.
Right. And that's the question we're answering right now.
We're answering that question now.
Right.
Okay.
In other words, hopefully in the different signal areas, people have addressed that in their bylaws committees. Now, this board is answering that question. Right. Do we think the signal areas can have different rules, specifically, about the meeting the diversity requirements, but in general how their elections are run, or should there be one set of ways, one structure to the election process?
But are you saying, Carol, that you thought that it was illegal, that they're different? Because if you thought they were illegal, why did you give us the option to even talk
to catch
about
us.
It? Yes.
And it works.
You know, I didn't create the options. The options are out there. These are questions that people raised in various committees around the country, and I reiterated them. They're not the Spooner questions, and I'm really a little sick of hearing that. It came out of discussions and